How you been, Josh?
Good, brother. How are you?
Living the dream, dude. Living the dream.
Are you really? That's it in Idaho, huh?
Yeah, it's not too shabby. It's we're
Are you
losing our
skiing?
snow.
Yeah,
Yeah,
are you skiing?
I got some good days in this year, but we also have new babies, so that's kind of put a damper in
Hey.
my play life.
No, Mazel tov.
Yeah.
I grew up in Southern California, so I grew up on the slopes. My parents had a place up in Mammoth,
Oh, right
and
on.
yeah, and there was a time where we went up every winter, and then one of our family members, who's actually one of my mentors, orthopedic surgeon, his daughter works ski patrol, so I helped with ski patrol, and it was a great. I miss it. The further I get from California, the more I realize at some point I need to work my way back there.
Yeah, I know. I have a tough view. I look out in my office over the city and up at the mountains, and I can at night I can see our, our local ski hill lit up. So it's
That's
about,
so horrible. I
yeah,
am.
about 40 minutes.
When I look out my, well, I don't have a window. When I look out my door, I see a wall. And then when I look to my front or back or left or right, I also see walls. Yeah,
Right on, dude. Yeah.
who's to say, I'm working at, I'll be a good, and by the way, my parents are both shrinks, so this doesn't help the case.
Yeah, I know, and I feel you. When I was in Atlanta, I looked out over I-85, so I would judge when I can leave based on how long it took a car to go through my window.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's exactly what Houston is. Before I leave, I watch three news reports, and then I have the Waze app, two Google apps, and a MapQuest, and I time it all until they all say the same thing, and then that's when I leave.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
That's quite extensive, so.
All right.
All right, here you go. You ready?
Absolutely.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, number 208, Clinical Residency for Athletic Trainers. This week, our guest is Dr. Forrest Pekka. Dr. Forrest is Dr. Pekka, so pardon, is the Director of Clinical Residencies. So we're going to be discussing clinical residencies in athletic training, and what does that mean? What do those look like? And since they're relatively new, where do we see them going in the future? I also have my esteemed colleague, Dr. Josh Ellen, representing the University of Houston Masters of Athletic Training Program. I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. My students are not with me today. If you want to join our conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. This episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/residency. So Dr. Forrest Pekka's episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/residency. Without much further ado, Dr. Pekka, will you please tell us your athletic training story?
Yeah, absolutely, Jeremy. Thank you for the time, and I will have to say that I appreciate the kudos for Dr. Pekka, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn last night, but I do not have those credentials as of yet. But I appreciate it, and yeah, my athletic training story actually goes back when I did my undergrad at University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. I was really interested in the sports medicine field. So I applied into the athletic training, educational programming at La Crosse. However, I wasn't an athlete at La Crosse as well. So at the time, I had to make a decision on athletics or athletic training. I chose athletics, but as a vertically challenged 5'9" guy, I didn't, I enjoyed my athletic career in college, but it didn't take me very far. So it was a few years after I worked, I had a quote unquote regular job for a few years, and ended up going back to athletic training in my master's program at Illinois State about 5 years after my undergrad. So it was always in my passion and my dreams, and I think being an athlete in college also, I had to deal with a lot of injuries, and it was a passion of mine to get back into the field and become a certified athletic trainer.
So, Forrest, I want to go back in time just a little bit more. Go back to where you started. You went through an internship program, is that right?
Yes, I did.
And
Absolutely.
what year did you come out?
98.
Okay, and then so you and I are pretty close. I came out in 99, but I took the long way around. I took 7 years to get out of undergrad. Yeah, I dropped out a couple times. And so from there, I want you to move forward. tell me about your master's. Where did you get that? And in what?
Yeah. So my master's degree, I got a master's degree in exercise physiology at Illinois State University. So, and it was, you're right, it was an internship-based program. I worked as a graduate assistant, as a teaching assistant. So teaching assistant in the anatomy and physiology areas, and then did my graduate assistantship with men's baseball for 2 years at Illinois State.
And so you came out with your master's degree in 2000, right, if I'm putting the math together?
Actually, it was 96 to 98 was my master's degree. I finished in 98.
Okay, I understand. And then so, like Jeremy said, you know, looking at all the residency standards and programs, I've noticed that the CADI, I don't know if this is the right word, but, you know, the CADI has tapped you in educating the rest of the athletic training community in these residency programs and standards and what they should look like and how they need to be developed and so on. So can you give the audience a little bit of a, just a general overview of how you, you know, leaving in 98 with your master's degree to where you are now, say 20 something years later, can you give us a little bit of a roadmap of how you got there? Because I know there are a number of students at the mine in particular, they've got some questions for you, and I'm sure they want to know how you got to where you got to.
Yeah, no, thanks, Josh. Yeah, it was interesting. After I completed my master's degree and I defended my thesis that summer, I was, you know, looking for employment, as most athletic trainers do. And I had a couple offers, you know, back in the Midwest, Milwaukee and Chicago area, but I had a really, really, you know, unique opportunity. I wasn't quite sure what path I was going to take yet. Considered, you know, going on to get my PhD, but I took an internship out in the Stedman Clinic in Vail, Colorado, and I worked in the biomechanics lab for about 9 months. I don't know if us older folks remember, but the digitizing. So, you know, I got to spend hours and hours in front of a computer. Tracking markers, body markers, you know, on you know, high speed video analysis. But after the internship, I was they had an athletic training fellowship at the Stedman Hawkins Clinic, and I was considering, you know, moving into that, you know, applying for that position. But fortunately, Dr. Stedman himself offered me a position to work as the athletic trainer in his clinic. Very fortunate, I worked there for almost 4 years. And then he called me into his office one day and told me that there's a great opportunity to work with the U.S. ski team. And I was, you know, I asked him, I said, why are you trying to get rid of me? And he's like, no, but I think it's a great opportunity for you. So I applied for the position and I worked for the U.S. ski team, for the men's alpine ski team, for 4 years from 2000. Was essentially on and off from 2000 to 2004 is when I finished and was able to participate in the 2002 Olympic Games in Salt Lake. Great experience. But after 4 years with the ski team, it was, you know, it truly was a dream job. It was a great opportunity. I got to travel the world and you know, ski all over the globe. I was on snow for about 200 days a year. As we were talking, Josh, it was not a bad opportunity. But when I decided to grow up and get a real job, fortunately, the you know, Stedman Hawkins had a great athletic training fellowship, you know, program at the time. They still do. And we also were able to work with a lot of orthopedic fellows who came through Vail and trained in their sports medicine specialty for a year. So Dr. John Zaroyans, Dr. X, was one of our sports medicine fellows. And when I left the ski team, he was down at Emory in Atlanta and said, hey, let's take what we did in Vail and let's expand upon it and let's create an exceptional athletic training clinician or athletic trainer clinician. So we started what we called then a fellowship at the Emory Clinic, at Emory Sports Medicine in Atlanta.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was really one of the first models in what we see now in the current residency standards, right? Stedman Hawkins was there, but when Emory really came online, that was one of the first real models that the athletic training community saw in, hey, look, these residency programs can be pretty viable.
You know, I'd like to say yes. You know, I mean, it's to debate, but I would, you know, I'd proudly say, you know, the model that we took, we followed the medical model at the time, and we looked at what the requirements were for an orthopedic residency, an orthopedic fellowship, and, you know, what the evaluation process was at that time. And we kind of followed that model for our athletic training fellowship. And I think, you know, I would like to say what we did is there were great programs out there. The two programs that were out there at the time were New Hampshire Musculoskeletal Institute and the Stedman Hawkins program. But we took it and we looked at what the evaluation process would look like and how do we actually measure the success of these residents. At the time, we looked at it as how are we measuring the success of our residents and our fellows, of the athletic trainers and their competencies to become a good clinician to work in that setting. It was in 2006 when I met with the NATA, with the PPEC at the meeting in Atlanta. And there was some variable discussions as to whether or not we were still athletic trainers or not. I remember having a conversation and, you know, with one of the educators, who asked what I'm doing. And, you know, I said, well, fortunately, you know, I get to evaluate 12 ACLs a day, you know, and 8 bank carts and, you know, labral tear. So, you know, we still perceive that to be part of our athletic training profession. And fortunately that at that time, the NATA and the PPC sent out Bonnie Van Loonen to look at a couple of the programs around the country and get an understanding of what we're doing. I think it was incredibly fortunate for us and for the profession as a whole and the way that the residencies have developed to have Bonnie come out, because she looked at it as it is an advanced education for athletic trainers. The one thing we did change in it is to follow the CADI standards. We had to teach our athletic trainers and help our athletic trainers advance in the skills and the educational competencies of athletic training rather than teaching them a career setting. Sure. So, you know, initially
you're talking about more specializing, you know, after they've been given the foundation of their education, let's take certain areas of those practice domains and become specialists in those domains.
Absolutely. And I think it was a exceptional movement within the educational programming, because it's really designed now that the athletic training residencies, you know, the CADI went and they moved forward. The NATA started, the CADI took over the educational programming in 2012 and has since developed standards and guidelines for post-professional athletic training, you know, residency educational programs, you know, within that specialty clinical area of focus, you know, within the domains of education, AT education, as you spoke about. And we feel it helps create depth of knowledge and advanced skills in that concentrated area and designed to create specialists, you know, in that specific educational competency and as you mentioned, for the profession itself.
And is it fair to say that you were on the ground floor of those CADI standards?
You know, I certainly worked closely with the CADI and, you know, originally with the NATA and with the CADI at that time. And, you know, and recently I've been involved with the CADI to help, you know, to continue to build upon those standards. You know, I can't take, you know, full credit. I think it was the CADI that really, you know, took the initiative to move forward. But I'm, you know, I'm proud to say that, you know, I provided any experience and any, you know, any knowledge that I had to help develop that.
All right. So I want to be able to tap on something. You know, we spoke to Dr. Merrick yesterday. And first, let me go back. And Jeremy, the program that you set up over the month of March for National Athletic Training Month is outstanding. Thank you for taking this on. This is a great service to the profession. So we spoke to Dr. Merrick yesterday, and he brought up something really interesting afterwards. I went to go look it up. And he said, you know, if you really look up the definition of primary care, and you put your thumb over the word physician, it really describes athletic training, right? That one of the things that he said is that we pretty much treat anything that comes through the door. And so in your mind, Forrest, as these residency programs start to increase, tell me where you think these roles are going to go. Because, you know, I've heard a lot of different things about what residency programs should be and what they shouldn't be. One of the things we know they should not be is you know, this is not a substitution for graduate assistantships. This is to develop advanced practitioners. And in that realm, where I'm looking at it is I'm looking at, you know, the physician extender model, whether that's with primary care or orthopedic surgeons. I'm looking at occupational medicine. You know, where else do you see these residency programs going, and how do you predict the next 10 to 20 years of this is going to follow?
No, it's a great question, Josh, and I agree wholeheartedly with Dr. Merrick and yourself. I think, you know, athletic training as a profession does see, you know, patients, you know, at all different levels and all different realms of providing patient care. So I think, you know, right now there's the interesting part of the residency programs. You know, they should be focused on patient-based specialization, providing preparation of the resident as an advanced practice healthcare provider. The residencies are interesting because as long as you fall into the standards, they allow for a lot of variability and creativity within the programs in order to allow them to develop that clinical area focus. And, you know, currently within most settings in the physician practice setting, you know, our clinical area focus is eval and diagnosis. But if you look at Ben Hogan, you know, they have a program that's focused on rehab, rehabilitation. New Hampshire has a program based on primary care and gen med. I see in occupational medicine, I see areas for occupational medicine. I see areas for all, you know, all kinds of concentrations. We've been fortunate to, you know, one of the things when I got to Emory, it's, you know, in order for me to justify my job, I had to demonstrate why I was good and what I was doing in order to validate why they were going to pay me. So we looked at the ability to increase throughput and patient visits within our physician practice setting, and looked at physician satisfaction and looked at patient satisfaction. And due to our successes of increasing productivity, we were able to hire more and more athletic trainers within that field. The occupational setting has been incredibly successful with Boeing, with UPS, with, you know, with Kennedy Space Center and how athletic trainers have operated in that area. You know, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of data to prove that. You know, I think internally they have the data. That's why they continue to hire athletic trainers. But there's issues with being able to publish that data externally. I think the military is also a great example on how athletic trainers are being successful in those fields. So where do we see that? Where do we see our growth? I think all of those opportunities, you know, provide athletic training, you know, provide us the ability to increase or to advance our athletic training knowledge and create advanced practitioners. Me being in the physician practice setting and being part of healthcare, I see a lot of opportunities for athletic trainers to fall into healthcare reform and to meet the needs of healthcare reform. You know, we know that healthcare reform is, you know, we know more and more patients are going to be, you know, insured, or more and more patients, you know, will have insurance. So that's going to place a pretty big bottleneck within the provider. So who do we hire to meet those needs? And, you know, we've demonstrated that having an athletic trainer in the clinics is able to increase productivity. Then they're going to measure on outcomes. You know, are the patients getting great, good outcomes? Are they, are the patients satisfied with their care? And all of this has to be at a controlled cost. So athletic training as a whole, I'm going to go to this, you know, step off to the side a little bit and go on a squirrel moment or a side note, but athletic trainers as a whole has been operating in accountable healthcare models since our inception, right? If you look at the university setting, we have a fixed number of athletic trainers with a fixed budget, managing the care of many athletes, seeing them from anything from, you know, initially evaluating them from coughs, colds, to athletic injuries, to whatever it may be, like you said, meeting that primary care model, and then managing that care, referring when necessary, and we have to have great outcomes with it. So I think as healthcare reform continues to grow, in my opinion, I think athletic trainers are in a prime position to set themselves up to be part of that healthcare community and part of that accountable care team. But we have to have the data, and we have to be able to demonstrate the whys. one area that we're really looking at right now is within the rural family practice medicine. That's part of our athletic training residency rotations. And we're sending our athletic trainers out to rural family practice clinics. And I think it's a small rotation. It's about 6 weeks annually, but we have seen the increase in productivity. But the unique part about it is that the physicians really rely on the athletic trainers as the musculoskeletal experts in their clinics and being able to help manage the care of their patients. We've seen increased patient satisfaction. We've seen better outcomes. We've seen less unnecessary referrals, so we're not getting advanced imaging, or we're not referring to unnecessary physicians and unnecessary practitioners. And as well as, I think, in some of those underserviced areas, the athletic trainer working in those clinics is allowed to, you know, provide quote-unquote traditional services to an underserved community and provide care to the high schools and to the community events that haven't historically had, you know, medical care.
And so let me ask you a question. You know, as you're one of the leaders in this next great adventure in athletic training, what's been the feedback, positive or negative, from other providers that are in this space? So let's bring up, you know, obviously in athletic training, we've got five domains. And I always ask people, you know, the most likely comparison is between AT and PT. And my response is, well, why are we so interested in competing in just two domains, right? Then we go into, you know, AT and PA and, you know, all these other things. So what's been the feedback, positive or negative, from other providers when they say, okay, well, athletic trainers are going to fill a very niche space, and you're in the hospital setting where, you know, obviously you're in what I like to call the medical village. So how is all this being perceived? Is it being perceived okay? Is it, you know, tell us a little bit about how that is evolving.
Yeah, great. Again, great question. Way to get me thinking. But, you know, from the physician and from the administrator aspect, you know, being at this now since 2004, when we started the first program at Emory in 2004, and being able to present their data and talk at the various, you know, physician meetings at AAOS, AOSSM, AMSSM, and then even at the administrators meetings. I think what the administrators and the physicians see is that valued healthcare provider as a team member. And I think that's where we want to continue to put ourselves as part of the team, rather than competing with others as to we're going to take your space or they're going to take ours. The physicians and the administrator who have hired athletic trainers in this field have been incredibly, you know, happy with their successes and how the athletic trainers operate. And primarily from those coming out of a residency program, because they're given the knowledge, the understanding, the advancer skills and eval and diagnosis, but they understand the clinical model. So they're able to step in and actually be a productive clinician day one. But I think what we've, you know, within our institution and many other institutions, the athletic trainer is considered part of the team. You know, when we're looking at our patient care model and how to provide the best care for our patients, we look at who's going to be, what group of healthcare providers are going to assist in that. So we have PAs, we have MAs, and we have ATs within our physician practice model. And we use each of those clinicians to the highest scope of their practice. So both in clinic and in the OR. So, and then you have to be a little, you know, a little business minded as well. When we have surgical cases that, you know, a PA necessarily is not going to get reimbursed as a first assist for, you know, for, or anybody's going to get reimbursed for a first assist, it's great to have the athletic trainer assist in those cases, because then the PA can come out and run a patient, run a clinic, and actually help to meet the clinic needs by seeing more patients in the clinic. And the athletic trainer is then assisting in the OR, and we use our healthcare team to be as efficient and as effective as possible with everyone working at the scope of their practice. Do we see a little setback, you know, from different professionals? I think in any healthcare community, or as you said, in the healthcare world, there will be, but I think it's within time. And as everybody falls into their roles, you know, we're looking at providing the best care for our patients, and everybody fits into that role quite nicely.
Okay. So yesterday I sent out an email to all of our students here at UH, and a couple people responded. And I'd like to read you a couple questions, if you don't mind, where you can provide some answers, because these are really interesting questions, I think. So this one is from Ashlyn Vineyard, who is a first-year MAT student. Hi, Dr. Yellen. I'm very interested in the athletic training residency programs, and in particular, physician extending residency programs. One thing I've noticed is that I've been meaning to ask about is that many of the athletic training physician extender residency programs, for example, Emory, which I think, Forrest, you've got some insight to, require applicants to be OTC certified or in the OTC testing application process. My question is, how would a student just graduating from an athletic training education program go about working towards this credential and then apply to a physician extender residency program? Is there a particular plan of action to gain the experiences towards OTC, or are internships available? Thanks, Ashlyn Vineyard. Forrest, you have some insight to that?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ashlyn, and for the question. I think, you know, first I want to take a step away and discuss the term physician extender. And, you know, I have to take a lot of blame and credit for trying to utilize that term more often early in my career, because it was really difficult to identify who we were as athletic trainers working in this field. In January of this year, the NATA Board of Directors had agreed, based on a nomenclature group that we had, to kind of move away from that term. Physician extender is a pretty generic term that highlights anyone that works under that performs services that can be conducted by a physician that works under the supervision of or direction of a physician, which can be an RN, an NP, a PA, an MA. And all of those professions are recognized by their profession. So, you know, athletic training is taken on the physician extender term, but we're missing the athletic trainer, right? So you can be a nurse in a lot of fields. You can be a nurse in the NICU. You can be a nurse on the floor. You can be a nurse in the clinic. You can be a nurse in the laboratory, but they're all nurses. So we're moving away from physician extender and working on profession first. So we're an athletic trainer in the field. And I think that's going to help us as athletic trainers. So, yes.
So probably the most appropriate term is to say, I'm an athletic trainer in a physician office, or how would you term that?
Yeah, I'm an athletic trainer in a physician practice setting.
Okay.
So, or an athletic trainer in a collegiate setting or a professional setting, you know, profession first as athletic trainer. And yeah, when we did start the program at Emory, it was to be a quote unquote physician extender, is to be an athletic training clinician working in the physician practice. And I think we still produce that product, but through KD standards, we've developed that clinical area of focus, and now we measure and we test and we evaluate the athletic trainer on their advanced skills within eval and diagnosis and measure those outcomes. So the OTC is really unique. It's what it did for us is that when we were at Emory, there was a break with formalized athletic training education and then what we wanted to do to get our athletic trainers into the operating room. And we really don't have a lot.
Let me go back real quick. Sorry to interrupt. For those that are not up to date about these terms and the progress in the field, OTC, and, you know, typically people equate that to over-the-counter medicines. In this case, they're being referred to as what?
An orthopedic tech, orthopedic technologist certification.
Yeah, certified orthopedic technologist.
Yep.
Okay. Continue on. Absolutely.
So we had to demonstrate that. Where do we bridge that gap between our formalized athletic training education program and then the ability for one of our goals was to get our athletic trainers into the OR to assist our physicians in the OR. And being that we don't have a lot of that or any of that education within our formalized education program, the orthopedic tech certification was an avenue to demonstrate that athletic trainers had the ability for these advanced skills, at least on a multiple choice question test, to have some understanding of what it takes to function and operate in the operating room. That OTC certification was enough to let our OR credentialing folks allow the athletic trainer to start their didactic programming within the OR. Mm-hmm. So it was that stepping stone to get into the OR. And back in when we started this, and there wasn't as many restrictions upon billing and reimbursement for surgical assist, the OTC also had a disclosure within their roles and responsibilities that, you know, the OTC can work as a first or a second assist in the OR. So we use that in cases where reimbursements were applicable, to use that credential as our ability to be reimbursed for our services in the OR. With the change in healthcare and healthcare reform, that's becoming less and less likely. So it does give us a head start to get into the OR credentialing piece, you know, into the OR didactic training. And it's also a great way to, you know, help foster, you know, education within casting and some of the other, you know, clinical roles and responsibilities. However, we've moved away from the OTC as a, we still use it to get through our OR credentialing purpose, but our job description for the athletic trainer working in this field is an athletic trainer. And the athletic trainer is awarded the ability to assist in the OR based on their, you know, residency training and based on their completing their educational and didactic programming for the OR.
And so as athletic training obviously is, you know, the announcement that everything is going to an entry-level master's occurred over the summer, and by 2022, all programs will be ELM, and that, you know, like we've discussed, these residency programs will start to grow. A couple questions I have in that. One, do you see the OTC educational competencies, some of the clinical proficiencies being infused to the athletic trainer educational competencies? And there's a second follow-up question to that. Do you see some of the residency programs being combined with some other advanced practice degrees, such as the DAT, et cetera? So it's somewhat of a two-part question for you.
So for the first part of the question, for the OTC, you know, the areas of concentration within the OTC are, you know, casting, splinting, traction, and, you know, about 20% is in the OR. I think with casting is pretty common for athletic trainers who have a competency in taping. Casting is pretty much follows the same rules and I guess follows the same paradigm as what, you know, casting does. So would that be included? I think possibly. The OR, it's interesting. I don't know if that'll be included within, you know, the educational competencies within athletic training, because it's such a specialized area. I think the residencies allow that, you know, as advanced skill sets. So I don't know if I can answer that question appropriately, you know, or give you a finite answer on whether or not we're going to include those competencies. I do believe that with athletic training education, you know, going to an entry-level master's in ELM, the OTC is still, you know, at its foundation, an associate degree. So sure. I think we are board certified. We're licensed healthcare professionals. I think our challenge and our goals as a profession is to gain recognition as athletic trainers and not needing additional credentialing to justify what we do. So, you know, I'm a proponent of building upon the scope of practice of athletic training and demonstrating that as athletic trainers, if we work under the direction of a supervising physician, you know, we're licensed in Idaho and our state practice act is very fair and it's very strong for athletic trainers. We're able to perform skills that were taught by the physicians, you know, that physicians feel we're competent in. And, you know, when I was in Georgia, it's the same. So, you know, our limitations, we don't have a lot of limitations within our scope of practice, as long as, you know, we have oversight by a physician closer to a PA, you know, more than an OTC. Mm-hmm. And what separates us from a PA is they're able to bill and they're CMS recognized.
And so going to that conversation real quick, I think one of the things that people don't understand about one of the moves to this entry-level masters is that CMS will not reimburse for a baccalaureate-level healthcare provider, and that in order for us to be in that space, generate revenue, be included in the medical model, we need to be at the entry-level master's degree setting. And so how have you seen that affect the residency space?
You know, I think that's a loaded question, because I think, you know, there's I'll go to the CMS. I think it's imperative that, you know, we work in the field of trying to obtain CMS recognition. And not only is it, you know, above a baccalaureate, above a bachelor's degree and into the master's degree, but there's also other limitations that CMS has with regards to recognition of the profession in all states, with California not being, you know, with not recognizing athletic trainers, and with Colorado just losing the Sunrise Sunset recognition of athletic trainers within their regulation. I think we still have more work to do in order to sit at the table with CMS. And one of those is to have every state recognize who we are as healthcare professionals. So that's another step that we need to take to CMS. But there's certain areas within CMS that we can work at. And one of the things that we worked at, that we looked at about a year and a half ago, the fall of, 14, was DME, the ability to fit and fit custom, you know, custom fitted DME. I think we can take that a step further. CMS, currently athletic trainers were not recognized to fit custom fit DME. They weren't on the list of healthcare professionals that are qualified to do that. I think all of us understand that, you know, we do that on a daily basis. We make, you know, given popsicle sticks, duct tape, and dental floss, we can make a brace or something to help us out. But I think we have to work at those little pieces, you know, within CMS. And I think we should take a really strong approach from the profession to be included in that list and start somewhere where CMS will recognize us as healthcare providers. And we are in an area right now where, you know, we talk about fee for service, we talk about accountable care. If we look at the future of accountable care, a fee for service model is not going to be very valuable anymore. And like I said, we've been in that accountable care model for quite a while and how we operate as athletic trainers. And I think we need to demonstrate how we fit within to the future of healthcare and that model. If we can continue to obtain, you know, billing privileges, that's awesome. And I highly support that. But I think we also have to look at what the future is going to bring and how do we position ourselves for the future. You know, I was on a talk with one of the NATA board members, and as you spoke about, Josh, as we look at certain parts of our educational domains, and one of the questions that was asked is, how do we demonstrate to CMS that we're in accountable healthcare, and where do we have athletic trainers working in rehab? And so we have them everywhere, right? We have them in the collegiate setting, the high school setting, we have them in the pro setting, we have them in the, you know, fee for service model in a number of states. Why are we just focusing on rehab? Why don't we focus on all of our educational domains and help CMS understand who we are as a healthcare provider? And as you mentioned earlier, kind of take the word physician out of primary care, and how do we meet all those requirements, and how do we fit into the model based on the primary care definition?
Right. All right.
Did that go off track a little bit, or does that help?
Residency programs in athletic training, it's just new. And what you have is that you have a number of people that have come out. Like, for instance, I came out of this almost hybrid program. At the time, we were KHEP accredited. But we really kind of followed the internship model. I mean, I think I had 4,000 hours by the time I graduated. Does that mean that I was prepared to be a clinician? Nope. It means that I had met minimum standards and I was able to enter the field. So, you know, you have different generations that are a part of this profession right now. And athletic training is, you know, it's evolving and it's moving. And people need to understand all the different components that are involved in progress.
And that there are all these different steps and puzzle pieces to make sure that we understand the picture of athletic training. How do we fit into the model of healthcare? How do we keep progressing? Because it was not that long ago that, if you understand the history of athletic training, right, we really came out of physical education and physical therapy. That's really where we came out of. And if you understand the timelines, well, in 1970 was the first athletic training exam, and 75 was the first, time that ATC was being used. And it was only in 1990 that we were recognized by the American Medical Association. So we're making all of these amazing leaps and bounds, but there's still more work to be done. And people need to understand the business that we're in, so that when they do go to the table, they're able to have conversations across the board, not in just one area. So I think you're doing a great job. So I got another question from a student of mine, Maria Rueda. Maria is a first-year MAT student. Regarding residency programs, again, using the term physician extender, but we'll substitute that as an athletic trainer in a physician office. For someone who's fairly new to athletic training, right, 2-year experience during grad school, do you suggest I get more experience before applying to a residency program? If so, what are the next steps I should take after graduation? And are you familiar with any places that offer internships in this area? So obviously the area that you're in, Forrest, is a lot of people want to get into it and they want to know how to do it. And, you're one of the people that have helped develop this. So what's some advice that you have for Maria?
Yeah, and then I thank Maria for the question. And, what I can say is, we do look for experience, and we look for experience in any setting for athletic trainers. Excuse me. Great question. We do look for, an athletic trainer. Our minimum requirements, as most of the other programs in the country, are a master's degree, which fits well with our educational programming as it advances. But I think there's, as you mentioned, Josh, I came through the internship program as well, and we had a lot of hands-on care at that time. We were able to get experiences being able to treat and manage our athletes or our patients. So I think with the residency programs, what it does is it offers that same type of educational programming, because you're being challenged daily on your ability to treat patients, to work with patients, to evaluate, to diagnose patients, and you're collaborating with your physicians and the other healthcare, team members on a daily basis on how do we get the best care, and how do we diagnose this, how do we evaluate it, how do we treat it, and what's going to be our next plan of care, as we have to document what's a plan of care for this patient. So I think the residencies provide that hands-on, provide that experience, and provide, us to be able to educate the athletic trainer to be successful as a clinician and in this setting. What do we look for with an athletic trainer interested in this field? We do look for experience. We look for somebody that's has a year or two, of work experience under their belt, because then they know what it's like to work. And they know what it's like, and they learn a lot on the job within their setting of what their strengths and weaknesses are, and then their ability to manage the care of those patients. It seems to be a better fit, coming into the residency, because then they have a better understanding of what they want to do and where they want to go, and how they want to utilize the skills that they're awarded in the residency programs. I'm not aware of a lot of internship programs. I am aware of some graduate programs that do offer, an ability or a rotation for the athletic trainer to work in a physician practice setting. So some of the different graduate programs do have rotations in the physician practice setting. And that, will help help the athletic trainer, choose their career path, whether it be this or any other career path. But what I would suggest is get the experience if you don't have it, to make sure that if you want to come into the setting, it's the setting that's right for you. So spend some time with your orthopedic physicians, whether it's your high school team physician or your collegiate team physician, and just understand how that operates and how the clinic operates. So, volunteer your time to get in there to experience what it takes you know, or what the clinic realm is really about. It's a different setting. You know, some people talk to me when we're going through our interviews right now for a residency program. I have 36 applicants, you know, which is great for us. We only choose two, so it's a pretty competitive process. But sometimes I hear people, why do you want to get into this field? And they're like, well, I like the hours. It's 9 to 5. And it's still not 9 to 5. It can be, you know, you're in the OR, you're cutting skin at 6:45. You know, sometimes you're in clinic till 7 o'clock. So there's real no 9 to 5 job in the athletic training career path. But I will say it's, you know, you're full gas throughout the day. You know, there's certainly times, as I, you know, try to explain to, you know, some of the applicants that, you know, I may take my first bite of my sandwich at 11 o'clock for lunch and finish it at 3, because, you know, we're seeing, you know, 30, 40, 45 patients a day.
Right.
So make sure it's the field that you want to get into and experience that before you make that jump and before you understand that, you know, or have a better understanding of the career setting before you make the decision to go into a residency program.
So I got to break away here and go teach at 10 o'clock. But before I do, if I can just take 60 seconds here, and I'm going to use a line that a friend and colleague, Mayfield Armstrong, uses all the time. Yeah, you know Mayfield, right?
And I know Mayfield.
Yeah, you know, he's right in that category with Rod Walters. You know, they don't make him like that anymore. And so Mayfield would always say, I'm going to give you the keys to the shop. And so, Forrest, take 60 seconds here before I log off. You've got somebody that wants to get into this realm. Give them 3 keys. What are the keys to the shop they need to know about to get into this and to be successful?
They need to have a drive for learning, you know, being able to understand, you know, what it is to be successful in the clinic. So they have to be good at, you know, at being able to document, take histories, do clinical exams. We also look for somebody that's going to be has inspiration to be successful in the profession and give back to the profession. And then they have to be a chameleon, because you have to communicate with different physicians of different personalities, and you have to communicate and educate patients of different economic statuses and socioeconomic statuses. And you have to be able to treat each patient like they're the, mm-hmm. that they belong. And you have to be able to work within those different demographics, as well as work within the physicians and be able to provide the physician the information that they need and how they like it and what they want. Is that 60 seconds?
You got it, man. I got to go teach. I will relay all of these words of wisdom to my students. I'm sure that some are going to want to be able to get in touch with you. As always, I love talking with you, because it's always, you know, sparks my interest, and I always learn a little bit more when I speak to you and Dr. Merrick and Dr. Cuppet, Ray Castle, you know, all those people that are helping, Leslie Taylor, you know, all those people that are helping grow the profession, Scott Saylor. Thank you, Forrest, for everything that you're doing, and I hope the next time I'm able to see you, it's on the slopes.
Sounds good, Josh. I appreciate you, my friend.
All right, Jeremy, thanks for everything. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks, Josh. All right, so, Forrest, you still with me?
I got you, Jeremy.
I think in just a second it should come back up. All right, you talked about the athletic trainer working as a physician extender, being able to collaborate in being a big part of the team, but one of the things that you said you were doing was sending them out to rural settings to where these are underserved areas, people that don't have very good access to healthcare. How does that work for someone to be part of a team and collaborate when they're kind of isolated in a situation that's not extremely normal for athletic trainers?
Yeah, Jeremy, good question. You know, we have the same requirements for our athletic trainer here in the clinical setting, you know, with our sports medicine practitioners, as we do in the rural setting. So they're the athletic trainer, while they're in the clinic, are still going to see patients, take a history, do a physical exam, you know, document into the electronic medical records, you know, take vitals if necessary, do med reconciliation if necessary, complete the HPI of the patient, order appropriate radiographs when necessary, prep patients for, you know, intra-articular, you know, injections. But ideally, you know, what we're asking our athletic trainers to do in any setting is to gather as much information as possible about the patient's pathology, whether that take their history, what is their past medical history, do a physical exam, what are they currently What is their chief complaint? What medications are they taking? You know, what medications could be, you know, counterintuitive of their, you know, their current, you know, their current pathology. Order radiographs and then present those findings to the physician. So we give a very concise and very prompted story of what that patient is. So whether it's an orthopedic patient or in some cases even a primary care patient, you know, our knowledge in the primary care or general medicine realm is not as comprehensive as our musculoskeletal education. However, that's one of the learning tools for our residents is to become more knowledgeable in those primary care, general health areas. But our focus is to take a big, you know, take the big umbrella, take the big scope of what's going on with that patient and narrow it down to what their chief complaint is and what we feel that diagnosis is. So we can present that to the physician. So the physician can then take those findings and be more efficient with their care to the patient. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I think that just kind of talks about how that they can collaborate and continue to grow, because, you know, the residency program is about learning and growing in your profession. So I was just curious, you know, to see how that worked there. And, you know, when we talk about rural settings, I talked to Chris Dean, is the president of the Alaska Athletic Trainers Association, and he was telling me about some of the rural settings they have there. And it'd be interesting to see if you guys were able to send any athletic trainers to those rural settings, which are truly, you know, you have to take a plane to get there. There's no doctor and just some different situations, but just to see how athletic training is growing. One of the questions I want to ask, and I know you've been through it several times, but can you give me a simple definition of what is clinical residency for an athletic trainer?
Yeah, a clinical residency, if you define it by Webster, it includes a period of advanced training in a medical specialty. So that's the Webster definition, you know. And then I can give the credit to the Katie for all their hard work and dedication to develop this. They've developed those standards and guidelines for post-professional athletic training, you know, residency education programs. So we're advancing the training within a medical specialty within the educational domains of athletic training.
That's pretty clear and right through. I know between the conversations, you listed a lot. Do you have a list of some of the current opportunities that we could just go, item by item? These are current opportunities for clinical residency.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's currently 4 accredited programs in the country via CADI. So those programs are New Hampshire Medical Institute, Ben Hogan, you know, who has their clinical area focus in rehab, and then, you know, us St. Luke's out here in Boise, proud to say, you know, we're the 3rd program, and then Emory, you know, where I was in Atlanta, has also been accredited. And you can go to the CADI website and look at those programs that are currently enrolled, you know, starting within the self-study, but they're enrolled in being evaluated on accreditation. And it starts with a 1-year self-study, and then it goes on to, you know, a site visit, just like the professional and post-professional education programs. And there's 11 programs currently on the CADI website that are in the application process for accreditation. Those include University of Wisconsin. I don't know if I can, off the top of my head, know them all. University of South Carolina, Spectrum Health in Michigan, University of Michigan. Those are the ones that come to mind right now.
Yeah, that's right. We can look on the CADI website there and see that. So just wondering about the programs. And then inside of those clinical residency programs, do you have, do you know which each of those is specializing in?
Yeah, the majority of the programs, like I said, the first 2 programs, NHMI and Ben Hogan, you know, the first 2 accredited programs were not, I think NHMI has some physician experiences, but most of the programs are within the physician practice setting and with a clinical area of focus of eval and diagnosis. And I think it's just been growing this area has been growing over the last, you know, decade to 15 years. So I think there's a better need, there's a higher need for athletic trainers in that role. But I think there is a program in Houston at Methodist that's looking at another rehab, you know, rehab focused residency program.
Okay. I know one of Yellen's students, Nicole Kasha, was applying or planning to apply to the Ben Hogan residency program there. So
yeah, said, Craig's done a great job at that program.
Okay. And that is more or less, I think we covered everything that I have there. Is any other things that you wanted to address that we didn't get to?
You know, I don't know. I it's a good question unless you've through the conversation, you have an idea of something that we've missed, but I believe wholehearted in the residency programs. I believe in the advancement of our athletic training educational paradigms and our educational programming. And I think, you know, we're excited to have Katie recognize the residency programs and we're excited to be able to develop clinical specialists within our field and help demonstrate why athletic training belongs, you know, in our healthcare community.
One thing, when we were talking to Dr. Merrick yesterday, he mentioned the post-professional programs are focused on people who have worked and then have started deciding to go back to school. Is that something that's part of the clinical residency?
You know, I don't, it's a hard question. I think, you know, we do have a number of applicants who have been working, you know, in the athletic training profession for a number of years that express interest to starting a starting, you know, as one of our residents. And it's usually in the realm of, you know, kind of changing their career path a little bit and understanding that the residency is the best avenue to prepare them to be successful in their new career path. But we also get a lot of applicants just coming out of grad school, you know, folks just coming out of grad school and want to continue. I think we've been successful in both of those realms, accepting applicants. Like I said, it's usually we look for somebody that's got a little bit of experience that actually, you know, has the experience out of school and in the working environment as they understand the day-to-day rigors of the workloads, if that's fair. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly fair. I mean, you said that earlier, you prefer them to have a little bit of experience if that's volunteering their time or, you know, like you said, working, you know, a summer or a year, whatever, before entering the program. So
absolutely. But right. we have successful candidates that come right out of grad school as well. I think it's we've been very fortunate, but it's like I said, it's a tough decision. We got to narrow our group down, and just like every other program in the country, you try to find the right fit for your program. But I think what most of the residency programs, we have about 8 or 9 programs that work together. Not only do we want the right fit for our program, we also want to make sure that the resident themselves find the resident or the applicants themselves find the right residency program that's going to meet their specific goals and needs. Because even within the physician practice residencies, there's a lot of variability within those programs. Some programs have a very high concentration in the surgical aspect. Some programs have, you know, various rotations, including hand, wrist, general orthopedics. We have a little bit more experience in the primary care and family practice setting, but there's a lot of variability in the programs, and we hope that our goals and the applicants' goals meet, because that's going to give us and the applicants the best opportunity to create a great product.
All right, very good. Now, you gave me some contact information for you. So it's your email and your phone number. I have those here. You also said to visit the Katie website. Again, that's caate.net. And that'll talk about the accreditation and standards guidelines. And then your program there. Talk a little bit about the St. Luke's Sports Medicine AT residency.
Yeah, our residency is... you know, we have a concentration in musculoskeletal medicine. That's a primary focus of our program is musculoskeletal medicine. And that's where the residents start in their first 4 to 5 months. And then after they develop a pretty comprehensive understanding of MSK knowledge and care, then we, that's when they start doing their rotations outside of our orthopedics department and in, you know, family practice and primary care settings. And then they come back and they finish it up within our musculoskeletal medicine. We have both primary care sports medicine physicians as well as orthopedic sports medicine physicians. We have a high concentration in radiology and education in radiology interpretation. We do have an OR curriculum where our athletic trainers assist in the OR. We do weekly QOWs, questions of the week, that the resident has to do in epidemiologic, evidence-based research on certain pathologies that they present to their peers and to their colleagues for case study presentations. And I think our concentration in research is pretty high. For more information, people can go to our website, which is www.stlukesonline.org/ATresidency. That'll get you to our website. There's also a really good tab in there that talks about the resources and all the publications and all the articles supporting athletic trainers in the physician practice setting. Feel free to call me on my office, which is 208-489-4299, or my email, which is first initial F for Forrest, F-P-E-C-H-A, P-E-C-H-A at slhs.org.
All right, so Forrest is... In here, you've typed PECA F at SLH. Is it F PECA or PECA F?
You know, they both get to me. So
okay.
It depends on if it's intranet or internet. So yeah, they'll both get to me.
Okay. All right. Very good information about the future of athletic training from Mr. Forrest PECA. And before we close it out, sportshealth.com. Keyword for March is Bubba. Keyword for April is Frio, which they're going to be there. We just purchased one of the units from them, so I'm excited to get that. Make sure if you email Robbie at getfriohydration.com to mention Sports Medicine Broadcast. It helps me out and it helps you out. So Frio Hydration, getfrio at friohydration.com, and then make sure you mention the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Now, Forrest, you're not going to be at Spats down here at South Padre, are you?
No. I'm heading to GLADA this weekend, and then we have our district meeting D10 at the end of the month.
All right. Because yesterday, Dr. Merrick said that he was actually going to be down there at South Padre because we're going to be broadcasting live there. So just thought it was a very small world. He said he goes almost every year. So
yeah, the South Padre seems a little bit nicer than that's not a bad place to have a meeting.
Yeah. It'll be my first year, so I'm pretty excited. Real quick, tell me a little bit about the trip that you have coming up, why we had to reschedule this.
Yeah, I travel with U.S. soccer with the national team, so I'm heading to Argentina with one of the men's national teams.
All right, so that's pretty exciting. So, you know, maybe on one of the days you're there, we can do a little Skype live chat from the stadium or something. I don't know what the Wi-Fi is like there in Argentina or at the stadium, so... We'll see. But anyways, have fun. Enjoy your soccer. You're traveling to Argentina. So does your wife get to go with you?
No, my unfortunately, my wife and the babies are at home. But my mother-in-law did move out here, so we have a little extra support. So it's kind of one of the benefits, or I guess if you talk to my wife, there's not really a lot of benefits of leaving. But the fact that my mother-in-law is here to help is certainly... certainly allows me to take a couple more of these trips.
Yeah, lessens the blow for sure.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, my website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, and again, this one's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/residency, so that's where you can find this episode and links and things that I'll have there. On Twitter, I'm PHS Sports Med. Again, that's PHS Sports Med. That's where you'll find me most. And every day in March that we have a day of school, we'll be podcasting. So check it out. Enjoy. We have another one later today. So for Jeremy, Dr. Josh Yellen, Mr. Forrest PECA, that is a wrap.